Hi, this is Dan Collymore, and you're listening to the B2 Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the B2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Laffin, and I'm joined by Anthony Kendrick.
Hello.
We're delighted to be joined on the line by former Man United, Blackburn, Forest defender John Curtis. How are you doing this evening, John?
I'm very well, thanks, guys. How are you?
Very well.
Yeah, good, thanks.
Do you have a Happy New Year?
Happy New Year to you both.
Have a nice Christmas over there. You stay in America for Christmas?
It was nice. It was actually really warm last Christmas. We had a little bit of snow, but unfortunately didn't have a white Christmas this year. It was warm. We went down the beach on Christmas Day. So,
let's firstly start off with Zoom. How did you get into the game?
As a player?
Yeah. How did you get into the game?
I think as the way all kids do, we all play, don't we? And I played for my local Sunday league team, which was Chipwin Squirrels FC in Nuneaton. And things kind of just went from there. When I was a young kid, I was probably about 8 or 9, really, when I started playing for them. I don't know how good I was. You'd have to suppose you've got a question from my dad, I think, that one. But anyway, kind of made my way up. And when I got to kind of secondary school, 14, 15, playing for the school, playing for the district, playing for the county, it kind of snowballed from there, really. And because as soon as you started playing for your district team, which for me was Nuneaton and Bedworth, the district of Nuneaton and Bedworth, which is in Coventry, that was when the professional scouts started to watch the young players play. I've discovered when I got to about 14, 15, I was pretty good. So I'd had lots of advice. My dad would probably have more advances than me, I suppose. So he'd have advances from the local coaches. And the first club that showed an interest, actually, was Stoke City. They had some coaches, Dick Bradshaw and Bernard Paynton. Bernard was chief scout of the Blues, if I remember, last time I saw him. I don't know whether he still is. He went with Steve Bruce a lot, so he may have moved. But he used to coach me on a Friday up at their little centre of excellence thing that he used to do. And that was my first involvement with a professional club.
Yeah, and how were you supposed to play United?
Well, it's funny because Jeff Watson, the guy who scouted me, that's where he was based, his family was based. The Nuneaton district was his kind of local team to watch, so it was convenient, really, from that perspective. So Jeff was my scout that noticed me. I was probably around 13, something like that, when United first started to show an interest.
That's David's fan to me, and he'll talk through your playing career, and then we'll come back to your coaching career.
So how was it to go up, like, through the ranks at United, playing for the younger side, the youth side?
At the time, you don't really appreciate it at the time. It's only now, looking back, that you think, wow, how lucky was I? And to be involved with that youth system at that time, with the people that were involved in it and people that were coming through it, I was very, very, very fortunate. It was an amazing. I didn't know any better. It was only until I left Manchester United to go on loan to Barnsley, that you realise the difference. As a kid, I was lucky. I started at Stoke, and I went to all the different local clubs, Villa, and I went all over the country, funnily enough. I went up to Rangers in Glasgow, Arsenal, West Ham, you name it. I went to have a look. United stood out, and the reason I decided to sign for Manchester United because they invited me up to the game where they'd won the league for the first time. They'd already won the league. It was the Premier League trophy was going to be presented at Old Trafford. They were playing Blackburn at Old Trafford. And the atmosphere that day was absolutely amazing. I think it'd be 26 years they'd won the title. And to be there that day and to experience that atmosphere, I said to myself, look, this is where you want to play football. It's very, very difficult to turn that down.
Cool. Amazing, remember that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Amazing experience.
We've got a question from one of our listeners, Angela Rayman, who asks what it's like. What was it like to be able to call the class of 92? Your teammates, you know, Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs, etc.
Look, you know, it was like I said. It's only looking back now that you appreciate, you know, what these guys have achieved and who they actually are. Because at the time, they're just like anybody else. Yeah. You know, those guys are a little bit older than I am, so we always looked up to those guys. And they were kind of like the trailblazers for the young lads who were coming up behind, like myself and Wes and Jonathan Greening and people like that. You know, they were fantastic role models. It's no accident that those guys have got to where they've got to. They were obviously talented, but the work rate, the effort, the determination that those guys have shown is the reason they got to where they got to. You know, you look at David Beckham and what he's achieved, and it's not some God-given talent that he's got. He's a good player, but it's the amount of hours he spent in the cliff indoors there practicing his free kicks. And there's that famous video of him scoring the goal against Greece for England, isn't there? And all the missed attempts that he had prior to that, and all the day before training on the Old Trafford pitch, and the practice that he put into it. That's a great demonstration, and they were all the same. Every single one of that group, you know, were practicing all the time, and they got what they deserved.
So at Man United, was it a real work ethic, a really good work ethic that got the players through that and got them, you know, to the top?
I think the youth team coach at the time, Eric Harrison, personified everything that was all the mental strengths that those guys had. Eric had in spades and passed those on in spades. He was like Sir Alex in that respect. He was the perfect foil as a youth team manager. Because I look back now and think, Eric wasn't the best technical coach or the best tactical coach that I've ever worked with. You know, as a young player, I was lucky to come playing for England and things like that. Worked with some fantastic coaches. And Eric wasn't that. But what he did, he prepared you mentally for the professional game better than anybody I've ever known. And as a youth team coach, I suppose it's to transition from that youth level into the professional level. And he got you mentally prepared far better than anybody else I've ever met since, before, you know, whenever.
Let's look at the transition then. How was it to play under Sir Alex Ferguson?
Special, you know, obviously, again, but it's very difficult when you're there, because you don't appreciate it. You think it's just the gaffer. We knew at the time that Man United are arguably the biggest club in the world, biggest club in England. So you knew you were an amazing place. But because you came through that environment and you were involved in that kind of, I call it pressure cooker. Mm-hmm. You do your coaching courses now and you talk about creating an environment to develop players. Cliff, at that point, had it down to a T. You know, as soon as you got through those gates into that Manchester United territory there, you knew you were going to work. You knew you had to be on your toes. You honestly, it was phenomenal from that perspective. You were there to work and to get better. Everything was honed towards it. The way you sat down in the waiting room with the guys down there. You know, if you were slouching around with your feet up on and the gaffer came down or Eric came down, honestly, your life wouldn't have been worth living.
You sound like it was terrifying.
It was in many respects, but that's what you needed. Listen, I've never been to, big banking headquarters or, you know, Oxford University or Harvard over here in the States and walk through the front door. I can only imagine big institutions like that in whatever that kind of environment is created by the leaders and the history and the heritage that has gone before. And it was definitely felt at Manchester United. And it was that environment for me. And the preparedness from the U team right the way through to the first team, it was no different, you see. So you'll ask how it was to play with Sir Alex. It's playing with Sir Alex wasn't that much different to playing with Eric Harrison in the U team, because everything was consistent. The message was the same. The environment was the same. The same levels, the same expectations were there upon you. And it was that the competitiveness that Sir Alex had, and probably still, well, he definitely still has, he never lose that. That was passed down through all the teams, and you know, they wanted winners, and that environment bred winners.
All right, let's move on. David from the V2 forum asked, do you ever wonder what might have been if you'd stayed at United? Because you left after a few years there.
Yeah, well, listen, it was very difficult. I always said to myself, you know, but if you're not playing regularly in the first team by the time you're 20, 21, it's time to go. And I was lucky, really. I went to such a good club as Blackburn. The way it was blocked, I went to see the Gaffer, and Gaffer said, yeah, no problem, I agree. I think you'd be good for a new challenge. And within 2 weeks, I was on loan at Barnsley. Had an absolute great time, just missed out on promotion with Barnsley, playing the playoff final. You know, absolutely amazing experience. And then to go to Blackburn was excellent.
So you had a decent time at Blackburn. You was promoted from what was Division 1, now the Championship. Your first season there, played for the England youth team in the first season. Seems to be going really well in that season.
No, it's fantastic. Fantastic year of football, that, for me. Really good. I got injured the following, a little difficult, and never really regained my spot in the team. Was a big part player at Blackburn from then on.
But then overall, that first season at Blackburn, though, would you say that was a highlight of your career?
Again, I look back and the experiences I've had, being in that treble winning squad was probably the highlight, even though I was, you know, watching it from the bench or wherever, backseat view, but a front row view from many perspectives compared to the fans and other people. So yeah, getting promoted with Blackburn, you know, although we got beat playing in the playoff final with Barnsley at Wembley, the old Wembley, winning the League Cup with Blackburn a couple of years later at Cardiff, another fantastic one, on loan at Sheffield United, another playoff final, got beat again, unfortunately, but FA Cup semi-final at Old Trafford against Arsenal, lost, but great experience again. I've been lucky, you know, European Super Cup final with United. Occasions like that are rare in a regular footballer's career, and considering that, you know, I was only a very average player, to experience all of that is, like I say, very, very fortunate more than anything.
What do you think was the biggest game you played in?
Well, I played in two playoff finals. Uh-huh. So they're pretty huge games. Any game for United in the Premier League, you know, I played against some big competition with United. So they're always huge games. So FA Cup semi-final as well. So it's tough. It's tough to say. I couldn't tell you. You know, I couldn't tell you. League Cup semi-finals as well, but FA Cup trumps those. It would be tough to. Maybe probably the playoff finals. From a purely monetary sense, now they're even more valuable than they were then. But they regard them as probably like the most lucrative games in world football or something, don't they? So. Yeah. They're huge games.
Alright, you played for a lot of other clubs as well. You mentioned Barnsley and Sheffield United. You had stints at Leicester, Portsmouth, Preston. Are there any clubs in particular that stand out in your mind that maybe you played for less time?
I loved all the clubs that I played for. I definitely took something from. You know, the clubs that I went on loan for was brilliant, really. Barnsley, Sheffield United, and Preston, of course. Yeah, pleasure from playing for those clubs. Just going with Barnsley and Dave Bassett and Peter Shirtliff and people like that who I was working with, and then Billy Davis at Preston, and you know, the caliber of people. Neil Warnock, obviously, at Sheffield United. The people that I've worked with again has been absolutely amazing, and I've taken an awful lot from them. And hopefully I've cherry picked the best stuff, but. I've enjoyed it no end, and I always look out for, you know, to be honest, I always look out for United, Blackburn and Forest more than anybody else, because I spent more time there, and had a good time at each of those clubs, more so maybe than the others in terms of playing. So I always keep my eye on those scores. But even, you know, Northampton Town, you know, I played them in my last club in England before I went to Australia to play, and I'm constantly looking out for and seeing what's going on and things like that. So I take a keen interest in all of them.
That's great. That's great. So, caring about your clubs. You mentioned managers as well. It sounds like the managers, some of them, had a really big impact on you.
Well, the obviously the managers, apart from the kit man, the manager is the most important man at a football club. So it's you know, like I said, I've had a lot of great managers who I've worked with, and. Like then, not at the time, I haven't always got on with them. Like Mickey Adams was in charge when I was at Leicester, and Mickey I found to be a bit of a prickly character. He may have mellowed now a little bit in his old age, but he was a little bit prickly at that time, and I didn't get on well. Hence why I left pretty early to go to Portsmouth. The amount that you can learn in only a short time at Leicester City there, working with good players who've been there and done it, and staff who had been there and done it as well. It's amazing. And it's only when you look back now and trying to recall all this information. If I'd had a notebook as a player, jotting down all this stuff, and to look back on that would have been fantastic.
Yeah, you did. Well, going on to Cod, you did mention that you played out in Australia for Gold Coast United. How do you find this? How do you compare the standard of football to the English game?
Very different, very, very different, and that's a great experience. You know, there's an argument these days for young players coming through the system, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21. I think all of the clubs are a big development stage for players, and I'm a big proponent of our English players going abroad to play. I'm not suggesting Australia, but, you know, even going across the channel to France, and Germany, the game is very different in, as you travel around, and that's one thing I've learned having been in various places and worked in various places. It's not uniform everywhere you go, and that was certainly the case in Australia. Mm. In terms of the football, the A-League level at that time wasn't bad. I think it would be comparable to League One back in England. Different style, though. You know, completely different climate. I can remember playing there in like 40 degree heat down in Melbourne one day, and I was like, oh, thank God I'm playing right back and I'm in the shade. At least it would cool down by the second half and you could go out. But it was phenomenal heat. A great, great, great country to live in. So from a lifestyle perspective, you can see why Emil Heskey, I was there, and many subsequent players who have gone there. Mike Bridges is there and he's still there, coaching and commentating, etc. Because from a lifestyle perspective, Australia is a fabulous country to live in. Over here in the States, it's all about how much money you've got. In Australia, it's how many barbecues you have a week, how much time you spend surfing. That's the measure of your man in Australia. And yeah, that suited me at the time. It suited
late. Right, so we get on to your coaching. Alex Ferguson has a reputation as somebody who gives the youngsters a chance, including yourself. So, and gives them a chance against the first team. Is Alex Ferguson a major influence on why you enjoy playing and coaching the younger age groups?
Yes, to an extent. I think more so, I can't imagine Sir Alex coaching 13-year-old, 10-year-old kids. Imagine he's built for working with professionals, and you definitely have to tailor it. But I look at coaches who I've worked with a lot of the time within the England setup, people like John Peacock, who's now at Derby, who was with me at the FA National School, people like Keith Blunt, who was the head coach of the FA National School when I was there, as a 14, 15 year old, even England managers from the England Schools Football Association who I've worked with, teachers at the time, amateur coaches really, have gone on to be professional coaches, and all the lads that I've worked with at the various clubs. I think they're more of an inspiration for the youth side. One thing that Sir Alex and the environment that Manchester United created, if anything, what's rubbed off on me and that trying to attain excellence at all time, you know, trying to do the best you possibly can, and that work rate and that effort, more than that never say die kind of attitude. I think that's the Manchester United kind of philosophy from Sir Alex.
So you're out in America now. How did you first start coaching this?
Well, I coached while I was in England. So like many footballers, you get to the end of your career and think, oh wow, what am I going to do? Because when I was 22, playing at Blackburn, I probably never thought I'd be a coach. But as soon as you get to 32 and think, wow, hold on a minute, you know, you've been doing this for forever, John. You know, what else are you going to do? It's very, very tough transition. I'd say the hardest thing about being a professional footballer is stopping being a professional footballer, because you don't actually know what you're going to do. So it was an easy transition from that. I enjoyed coaching. Like I said, I coached when I was at Forest. I coached the under-16s at Notts County while I was there, and at Northampton I coached, continued to coach in Australia. And when I finished playing in Australia, a guy offered me a job in Italy coaching. So I thought, yeah, perfect. So I went to Italy, worked at a soccer school in Italy for 12 months, which was an amazing experience. Flying in kids from all over the world, Australia, Canada, the US, and some British kids as well. Working with them there, and we'd play against Serie A, Serie B teams. And that I really, really enjoyed. And that was kind of like my first gig as a professional coach. From there, I spoke to Ray Hall, funnily enough, who was the international ambassador for Everton. There was a job that came up, technical director of Everton America. And I asked Ray about it, and Ray said, definitely, John, you should interview for this job. And went to Goodison Park, was there, interviewed over in the States, which was my first foray into America.
So, as you mentioned, you worked for academies in England and Italy. What's the main difference between the European and the American development systems?
In America, you pay for it.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference. They're trying to get away from that now. The USSF introduced this program that they call the Development Academy, which is trying to be like the programs that our professional clubs operate back home. And they're trying to make it free. At the MLS clubs in general, it's free for the players.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest difference. And in England, their players, they're 10 a penny almost. You can just throw them away if they're not good enough. In America, they become customers.
Yeah.
And a little bit more. And if somebody's paying, they can actually complain.
Yeah.
They can actually, you know, say things and do things and influence things, whereas couldn't possibly happen at any level professional club in England. The player would be cast aside and someone else would take his place. And I think that kind of ruthlessness and that attrition is more commonplace in Europe than it is here in the States.
I imagine, like, generalize Americans, but they have a more of a winning all costs mentality rather than trying to develop skills.
Yeah, it's a disaster. It's a cultural thing that is a disaster for youth development in the US.
Yeah,
absolute disaster. And the quicker that is eradicated from the culture, the better. You wouldn't believe the side to that U9 field, U10 field. Parents abusing referees. I know it happens at home, but it is literally on steroids over here, because they are paying for it, and they have that win at all costs mentality, which is so detrimental to youth development.
So you are now working for the NY Club Soccer League. Can you give us a quick overview of what it is and your role with it?
So I'm the technical director of the New York Club Soccer League. It's arguably the biggest league, I'm not sure in terms of numbers, probably one of the biggest leagues in certainly in New York, even the northeast of America. And my role really is to run a couple of programs, a player development program that I run. It's basically, I don't know if you remember the old pick of the league teams back home, where you'd have the best players from each team. I run that program, try to develop the players, train them regularly, and try and give them a better environment, a more certainly more professional, I would hope, a better environment for them to develop. And with that, we have games against other PDP programs, and we kind of act as a scouting network for the national team. So we've got a game coming up later this month where we've got national team scouts there who will show up, and we'll try and show them the players that they've missed, kind of thing, because it's such a big country and they can't possibly scout the whole country. So programs like mine kind of help the United States Soccer Federation to identify players, which is great. I also offer advice for all the clubs within our league, advice to how the league should be ran, how we should play, the way we should play, etc., and bring that professional experience from home to bear here in the US. And it's a lot of diplomacy, a lot of balancing, and a lot of juggling, spinning plates, really, to try and get a happy medium where clubs, which are in many cases businesses, are happy, and we're still delivering the right things to the players. It's an interesting job. I really, really enjoy it. I think it suits my skill set.
So what age groups do you look after?
U7 to U18.
U18s. Okay, so have you ever used any of your contacts to maybe get some of in the UK to get trials for any players?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's difficult because of the rules that you guys are probably familiar with it, the FIFA rules, that the European passport rules that are in place there that inhibit players moving all over the world. And they put the time for getting players made on everywhere. So it is tough, but yes, I do. I've got a guy, a little lad, a little U10 player I'm trying to get over next month, funnily enough. But there is some rough diamonds over here. Particularly at the younger age groups, 9, 10, 11, 12, Jürgen Klinsmann's got the right idea. He understands that the best way to develop the American player is to get them out of America as quickly as you possibly can, until the system is right. So if the United States can get players into the European system, into a European professional academies, that those players have got a much better chance of developing. And it's the whole college system here in the States that screws it all up for these kids, really. Because that's the be-all and end-all, to get your college paid for, to have free college education. But in reality, the player, top player, gets a full ride at Georgetown, a real top university in America, then it's almost certainly curtains to any professional career that they professional aspirations.
They won't really get into the game until 22, 23.
Yeah, they
finish college for the
day. And there's some very notable players who played for the US and played in the Premier League who've come through and played in university. So, but it's the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah.
And there is obviously the MLS draft that takes place after every year for the kids coming through into the MLS. But again, for me, I agree with Jürgen Klinsmann. Let's get them out of this environment and into the European environment if the US kids are going to get any good.
Okay. And so what's your plan to show you hoping to get into management? Are you okay with the jobs you're doing at the moment?
I enjoy what I'm doing. And I think the most important thing for me is that I'm learning all the time. Having worked in Australia, Italy, obviously England, and now here, I've been on a very, very steep learning curve and still am. A foray back into the professional game is not out of the realms. I have, a good friend of mine is Paul Buckle, who came over and had a little stint at Cheltenham and left there. He's now coaching in the USL here in the States, over in Sacramento. I've got a few contacts who are working at the professional level over here. At the moment, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. So I want to do my pro license. I want to get my American licenses as well to experience. I've not done any international badges yet, so doing an American license would be great. Be nice to have got my UEFA A license. Wouldn't mind getting my USSF A license. I'd like to get my UEFA Pro and my USSF Pro license that they're just bringing out over here. That would be nice.
Anthony, have you got any other questions?
Yeah. How big do you think the game can get in the US? Because there's talk, you know, because obviously you've got basketball, American football, and all that as bigger sports. Do you think soccer can be as big as those? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. It's growing. It's growing all the time. I know they've been saying that since Pelé and Beckenbauer, you know, back in the 30s or whatever. it is growing. And what you're finding now is the next generation are more familiar with the game. You know, the kids that are playing now, their mums and dads play, and it's snowballing. The Hispanic population, the immigrants that are coming in from South America are a massive influence. Many of the best players that I work with have some kind of foreign heritage, whether they're European or whether they're South American. That's absolutely huge. There's some huge talent pools in Southern California and Florida and places like that, where the Latinos are, the big Latino populations down there that play the game just as we do, and as if not more passionate for the game than we are.
Women's.
Women's as well. Absolutely.
I was just going to say it's a lot bigger in America than it is across, well, say the UK or Europe.
Yeah, I used to, when I lived in Italy, it was very, the Italians were frowned upon it an awful lot about the women's game. But here it is absolutely massive. It's as big as the world champion, our most successful, ever. I think it was 3 World Cups, I think they've won. It's absolutely massive. The female stars over here are huge role models. They're slapped all over billboards and TV. It's a massive, massive market, that the female market. Every bit as big as the boys. And again, it's the college. It's all from a youth perspective. On the girls' side in particular, it's all about college.
One other thing, I saw Brad Friedel was made a youth coach. I think it's the under 12 level of the US team.
Right, I haven't seen that. I haven't spoken to Brad for a while. Great guy, good to see him. I've seen him on the TV. I think he commentates for Fox. But I think Brad's over in California, so we're unlikely to bump into each other, I think.
Fair enough. I've got nothing further to ask. I don't know if you've got anything, Chris.
Yeah, no, just social media and the websites. We'll include them with the description.
Yeah, listen, I think we did that when we talked about the PDP program.
Yeah,
I'm always after followers on Twitter. That'd be great, but I don't know if you guys want to plug something like that. I try and get that. That's where I really do want to. I'm a bit of a Twitter nerd. I'm 5 or 6 tweets a day, probably. Yeah. Photos, etc. With what's going on. That's the best way. It's the way you guys got with me. So
I'll include all the links in the description below.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So I really enjoyed speaking here today.
Yeah, definitely.
Come again in the future.
Yeah, listen, if you want a US perspective on things, let me know.
That'd be great.
That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds of crap that the Americans are doing now. Banning you. I don't know if you've heard about that one.
I saw an article about it. It's a health and safety issue, isn't it?
It's a legal thing, yeah. There's been
American football. It's just a concussion thing in American football.
Well, that's massive, yeah. But it's the it's a lawyer over in Washington State. Funnily enough, got his son or daughter was concussed several times, and he's basically filed a suit against U.S. soccer, U.S. club soccer, U.S. youth soccer, and all the governing bodies of the game in the States, and they settled and said we're going to change the rules. Otherwise, it could have been really bad.
So it's like no headering up until like under 18.
No. It's recommended. They're banning it, and I think it's still U10 or something like that. U10 or U11, and then advising not to head the ball, prior to U13 or something. It's because the vast majority of concussions that take place are through banging heads with each other. Banging heads on the floor, elbows, stuff like that. It's got nothing to do with actually heading the ball.
The balls used to play in the 60s, are huge, heavy.
Yeah, exactly. It's ridiculous, really.
Well, have a good, great rest of your day. I'll speak again soon.
All right, guys, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers for coming on.
Cheers.
Thanks, bye.